Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Monday, December the 16th, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It is once again a privilege and an appreciated opportunity to get to share the principles of the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness with each and every one of you. We are delighted that you're here to share with us, and our work together is that of learning and hopefully passing on to every mind, heart, and being on the planet this awesome set of tools called forgiveness. And of course, for those who are perhaps new to the show, the idea of forgiveness that we're talking about and the technology of forgiveness that we're speaking of has nothing whatsoever to do with the Greek idea that most of us have been filled with, that forgiveness is about how you let somebody else off the hook for what's happening inside of you. And it's a huge piece of understanding to reach to move out of what we have been taught all our lives. I know that Jeannie and I did a workshop yesterday afternoon in Boca Raton, Florida, and it was interesting as we spent 4 hours talking about forgiveness and that it is an internal process and that it has to do with going inside yourself and changing the content of your own mind. And on several occasions, as part of the process, I put forward the thought, you never forgive anyone for anything, you never forgive yourself. And after the workshop and spending 4 hours doing this, having a couple of people come up and asking questions, and then as they expressed their question, the words out of their mouths were, and you know, I've already forgiven them. I've already forgiven myself for this, and it's amazing how long it takes to make the shift out of talking of forgiveness as this idea of I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, rather than recognizing that what we're looking to do is to apply the tool of forgiveness to the content of our own mind. If I'm in turmoil, if I'm in pain, if I'm in upset, and I say, I am upset by what you said, I am upset by this event, the old idea of forgiveness, how often and how easily it kicks in, and I'm supposed to be forgiving you, or I'm supposed to be forgiving myself. We want to continuously make the point that forgiveness has nothing to do with them. It has nothing to do with letting anybody, including yourself, off the hook. It literally is, if you're in sadness, if you're in rage, if you're in guilt, if you're in grief, if you're in fear, if you're in trauma of any kind, forgiveness is a tool that you apply to your sadness, your rage, your grief, your guilt, your trauma, in order to change that within yourself. The act of letting someone else or yourself off the hook for doing something inappropriate is properly termed pardoning. So if I'm going to let you off the hook, I'll say, gee, you know, I think what you did was really terrible. If I'm going to let myself off, like, you know, what I did was really terrible, and I'm going to pardon myself for that, and now I'm going to go the next step of doing my forgiveness work around this issue. I'm going to go inside myself and recognize the root of my fear, my rage, my guilt, whatever it is, and I'm going to work toward removing that from my structure. I'm going to apply forgiveness to that in me, which causes me to speak or behave in a way that's off base with my human life. And in this work, we define a human life very simply, experientially, hold a newborn child, and you know exactly what a human life is. If you're not experiencing your human life, the human life you came into the world with, 24/7, 365, then everything that would interfere with your experience of that is a fit subject for forgiveness. Everything that would come up in you, should sadness come up in you, should sadness come up in me, properly applied, I would apply forgiveness to my sadness to remove the root of my sadness. If rage comes up in me, properly applied, I would apply forgiveness to my rage to remove the energetic pattern of rage from my structure. And so I just was reminded yesterday how deeply ingrained we are with this idea of forgiveness is about somebody else. There have been people who have taken this work and run with it, actually written books about it, and they're still talking about, you know, forgiving them. And we want to shift that on the planet so we go back and reconnect at depth with what genetically is encoded in us as forgiveness, and it will give us a richness and an experience of how to remove what never belonged, how to step into the truth of who we are as this awesome presence of love that we were designed to be. And so we're delighted to be here to share this space with you. We appreciate you dialing into the show or tapping into the show through the Internet. And, Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us today?
I do not. Yep, he just popped on. Hold on just 1 second. And, Tim, you're on. You're on.
Actually, you just unmuted me, Mitzi, or Jeannie. It's Rex.
I think that was Rex.
All right.
Hi,
well, Dr. Tim is not with us.
Okay. Well, let's say hello to Rex.
There he
Rex
is.
Has probably got some. Oh, there he is. There he is. We got both Rex and Tim. That's awesome.
Yep.
So, well, Rex, I'll go back on mute, and you can invite me after you talk with Tim if you'd like, or I'll just go back with the flow.
Cool.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I just joined. I was running a bit over with a session, and so I missed the intro. And I know all is in divine order, and things are flowing here. It was quite an intense, wonderful healing experience that we just went through. So I just hopped on so as not to miss anything.
Cool. Well, do you have anything to share with us about that intense and wonderful healing experience you just had with someone? Anything that's
appropriate
to share?
I think the key is holding the space of love and truly knowing and experiencing the person that I'm with as whole and complete, regardless of what negative energies, traumatic energies and negative beliefs they may be holding on to. And how that whole healing process takes place, what actually happens, we have all kinds of theories, but all I know is it works. And so I strongly encourage people to do this work, which highlights as a process the holding the space of love for someone while they look at what is less than love within their mind and body energy system. And just watch Ruka, watch God, watch the universe, watch Holy Spirit work. It is truly a blessing.
For sure. I'm in full harmony with you on that one. And, you know, that's actually a great opening for what I was going to share next, and that is that we just had a call with a team that's working toward supporting taking this work to another level on the planet. And one of the things that that we chose to do as a project, as a team, is that each day, 5 minutes before the radio show, each one of us have set our alarm clocks, and that alarm clock going off at 5 minutes to showtime is a reminder for the team, and I'm putting this out as an invitation to everybody who's listening to the show, who listens on a regular basis, or even if you don't have time to listen to the show on any particular day, that 5 minutes before showtime, you have your clock set or your alarm set on your phone, which most of us have got. And when that alarm goes off, after silencing it, to take the time to go into that love exchange, basically, to holding the space of love. And for anyone who's not familiar with that, we do an exercise in our intensives where what we'll do is we'll have two people partner up, and one person will close their eyes, go inside themselves and find the deepest, clearest love they can, whatever inspires or connects them to that. It might be, for me, it's the holding of my daughter when she was born. It just keys me in. When she was born, the energy, the presence of her entry into the world literally sent me into another world. And so I go back to that each time that I want to do the love exchange, and I tap into that presence of love. So if I were the person who was doing the sending in this exercise in an intensive, I would tap into that love, and then when I was feeling it deeply, I would open my eyes, and I would send it to my partner. So that's the first half of doing a love exchange. And then the partner, you know, just holds a hand up and kind of tests and checks out what, if anything, they're feeling. And so what we'd invite you to do, if you choose to do this and, you know, make it a daily practice of presence and love, we'd invite you to set your alarm and join with us each day at 5 minutes to showtime and just basically do a love exchange with the whole radio audience, with the whole world, with yourself, of presencing that active love in you. And my take is that when we allow that mind to be active in us, because it is truly, literally the Creator's mind, anything that we've made up, any of our non-human attributes, the hostility and the fear, in the presence of the Creator's mind, active in a human life, begins the dissolution of whatever never belonged. And that's why we encourage people to step into doing process work, and we define process work as the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. And as a practice, it's a powerful, powerful tool. And so we invite each of you to join us in doing that at 5 to the showtime every day. And we're going to ultimately move that idea throughout the globe and invite ultimately 7.5 billion people at a synchronized time each day to present love. And this particular conversation or came out of a suggestion, an image that Mitzi presented to us when she was thinking about the conversations we've had so many times about reaching critical mass. Yeshua was saying the words, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And perhaps you've heard the hundredth monkey story, that story in the South Pacific during World War I, where there wasn't much food left on the islands because of the destruction being done. And so the soldiers started to put out sweet potatoes for the monkeys to eat. So they had food, and they noticed that there was one particular monkey that would take her sweet potato and go down to the ocean and wash it before she'd eat it, the only monkey doing it. And they observed that each day she would take another monkey down and teach them to wash the sweet potato, the sand off of it, which I can only imagine would make that sweet potato a whole lot more tasty than a mouthful of grit. And what they observed was at the point where approximately 100 monkeys on this particular island were doing that, all of a sudden, every monkey on the island started to do the same thing. And not only that, but from surrounding islands, they start to get reports of, gee, we're feeding these monkeys, and they've changed their behavior. They take their sweet potatoes, and they go down to the ocean and wash them. So it's become called the 100th Monkey Effect. There's actually a book written called The 100th Monkey by, I believe it was Ken Keyes, who documented that one. And it is symbolic of critical mass, that we don't have to reach every mind, heart, and being on the planet directly in order to reach every mind, heart, and being on the planet directly. In other words, if we can get enough people who are entering into the practice of forgiveness, entering into a love exchange or that of holding a space of love, then everything changes. It becomes available to everyone. And it's been called critical mass. So Mitzi was asking the question and pondering, I guess, how, you know, when would we reach critical mass? And she immediately, she shared this on the our conference call this morning, she immediately got the feedback, a very high energy hit, that there were enough people on the planet, and all we had to do was synchronize them holding that space. So we decided to do the exercise of synchronizing 5 minutes before showtime each day. And so we invite you to join us in doing that. So that was a good opening for that, Dr. Tim. Thank you, sir. You're such a great straight man.
I've been practicing.
Cool. Well, is there anything else to share today from your perspective?
No, I feel complete. I was a blessing to be on that call this morning, and I'm glad to be here and looking forward to typing in if something strikes me, but otherwise I'm content to listen to callers and Rex and you.
Awesome. Well, then let's invite Rex. I think Rex perhaps had something to share. I just had a conversation with him, too, about his experience in the jail. I don't know what you might be ready to share or what needs to be shared, but how do you be, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Awesome.
Just real quick, putting my earpiece in. Doing exceptionally well. I as well enjoyed the call today and very productive. We're making some great progress. Mitzi's idea is really taken to heart, and we did our first love exchange at 5 to 12 today, and it was really cool connecting with everyone and meeting that. I would add that we've also opened up as a group that we're going to be doing it again at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or 5 to 8. Was it 8 p.m.? I think it was 8 p.m., yes.
8 p.m., yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so that I would just offer as well to welcome anyone. That was a thought I had. As far as the prison work and the evolution of the healing process, for me personally, I'm seeing a lot of changes, and I'm excited about, we have a plane in the background, I'm excited about the inmates, I'm excited about going back in. There was a moment during my experience of showing me parts of my reality in the world of actuality through the chaplain. I experienced some upset inside, and I did a lot of work on that and continue to heal those realities in me that might cause my upset, which appeared in the moment toward the end of the communication that he was sharing rather loudly, that appeared to be he was the cause. And I realized in the moment it wasn't that, but boy, my mind wanted to jump in and say it was, and I caught it pretty quick, but it definitely jumped in and said, he's the one doing it to me. so I realize that more clearly, and it's been very helpful. So in that, within a short period of time, there was a thought that crossed my mind that says, I'm doing this as a volunteer. I don't really want to experience this way. And it was in a different languaging, but that was pretty much it. There was a part of me that said, I'm done. I don't want to go back in here. And what I realized shortly after I had the thought, that it's like, wait a minute, that sounds like you're expecting something in return here. And then it just cued into a bunch of goals that I was running that were the cause of my upset, and I canceled them and forgave them, and as things come up, I continue to do so. So that's the tool of forgiveness to me. That's my experience of it, is breathing into it and using the formal, you know, tool with the worksheet, but also in the moment, anytime I'm upset, I know I have a goal running, and through a lot of years of repetition, I've trained my mind so it now starts to offer information that's supportive most of the time, rather than it being offering the information that is not supportive, which is, it's really helpful, very helpful.
So just a little interjection there. Forgave them, Rex?
Pardon me?
I say you language that you forgave them?
The reality's in my mind.
Ah,
yes, I forgave
them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Okay.
Yep, and it's definitely been, it's changing and progressing, and in the moment I kind of didn't want to go back, but then that left within three minutes. And once I realized I was blessed with being in there and having the opportunity for the chaplain to reflect things to me and to be able to step up in presence love and having that opportunity in that kind of environment and to be an example, you know, for myself and for all of the, you know, the inmates to the chaplain, you know, to everyone. And just to be that example is so powerful. And it's one thing that I've done a lot of talking about how I can do things, you know, and what we should do as far as intellectual understanding. And I feel like it's moving into an experience of actually doing it. So that feels really more solid in me, and I'm excited about it, and I just keep forgiving the layers inside that are there that seem to be in the way or hinder that. And I'm excited about our business that we're co-creating, and our crew that we've put together is just an amazing group of people, and what we're setting in motion and now getting ready to take action and are taking action on what we're being inspired to do. So that's my update, and I'd love to hear if there's any input or feedback, but most importantly, I would love to see if there's any other callers that, you know, Michael, and just turn it back over. Thank you, brother.
Cool.
Thank you, Tim.
Delighted to have you here. And Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Of course, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you're listening in the chat room or you're listening in one of those stations that we don't have access to and you'd like to make your thoughts known, we'd invite you to call into the show, 646-200-4169, and ask your question. If you push 1, if you're in the phone queue and you have a question for us, then Jeannie will see a little hand go up in the control panel, amazing technology, and she'll key you in and we'll get to chat with you. So, Jeannie, do we have anything going on in the chat room to be aware of, or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
There's only one person in the chat room today. It's real quiet there. There's a lot of people on the switchboard, but nobody has their hand up. So if somebody presses 1, you're first in line with no waiting.
So
hand just went up.
Oh, cool. Let's see what they've got to say.
Area code 970, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Cindy from Southwest Colorado.
Hi, Cindy. Welcome. How can we support you?
Thank you. Brad and I are here having our breakfast. I've mentioned before his Native American roots and his service in Vietnam. Not being married till he was 59, no children. And lately we've been really focusing on working with the genetics that he carries. We've been watching films like Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Last night we watched Dream Keeper. It is magnificent the way it brings up things for us to talk about and to apply to what we're learning from you. And I have one of my, in your introduction, you mentioned rooting out sadness, that's one of the energies that we don't want to carry within us. And, of course,
right.
Doing what we're doing brings up incredible sadness and grief. And so I understand about needing to clear those things out and that watching films like this is one of the ways we access those energies within us. But when you mentioned sadness, I'm having a hard time with this understanding the difference between sadness and compassion, because I think we're supposed to have compassion within us. And for myself, feeling sadness, I think, activates compassion in me. So I'm wondering if you could help me understand that.
Well, my input in that regard would be, My input in that regard would be that for me, compassion is one of the expressions of human life, that if we're actually in that human beingness, as we talk about with Hold That Newborn Child, one of the natural things that the child has is compassion. And one of the things, because of the insanity of the world, that is forced out of most people is awareness of their compassion. And the loss of the awareness of compassion for animals, for humans, for anything on the planet, the loss of that, I think, engenders great sensations of loss and grief, sadness. And so I think on our way back to connectedness to the full faculty of compassion, we're going to experience the healing of our sadness, until we come to the point where compassion is a joy-filled experience because it's fueled purely by the presence of human life, by our true human beingness, and that the presence of that in our physiology, and joy is part of that. And on the way there, the healing process is going to look like surfacing all the times where there was natural compassion and that compassion was suppressed. It was knocked out of us. You know, we watched recently a film, and I'm not thinking of the name of it, but, I believe it was Wounded Warrior Project. Maybe, Jeannie, you know if there's a more correct name of it. And one of the things that, and you'd probably find this one really powerful in healing, one of the things they talked about in that film is how the military teaches people to hate. I think it's a hate crime. I think legally now, with the laws, quote-unquote, so-called laws that are in place, the rules and regulations put in place by the government, I think that probably it's criminal activity. I'm not sure, but I think it's criminal activity. And so if one experiences and expresses compassion, then they are immediately, that is suppressed, that is knocked out of them, abused out of them, quite literally. There's a really good example of that in the movie Joyous Noel, where and it's a true story based in World War I on the Christmas Eve on the battlefields in France. The Allies, of course, are bombing and shooting at the Germans, and the Germans are shooting at the Allies. And there's a young man who's a German opera singer, and he has been forced to go to war. He's been forced to give up his profession and his state of being to go to war. And so on Christmas Eve, he breaks out in song over the battlefield with this powerful, resonant voice and sings a Christmas carol in German. And, of course, the Allies, interestingly enough, the Germans are Catholic, as many of the Allies are Catholic. There's a Catholic priest there. And so the allies start to sing back over the battlefield in harmony in English, and whatever languages they're speaking, start to sing back this Christmas carol, and as a result, they walk out. And each time I think about this, I still have to process some of my sadness and grief over the insanity of it. They walk out onto the battlefield with white flags, and they declare a truce for the day. And they end up sharing with each other stories from home, pictures, secret whiskey and chocolates that they have. They start to treat each other like human beings. And as a result of that, they compassionately decide that they're going to extend it, if I remember correctly, the details to the next day so that they can pick up and bury the dead that are on the battlefield. And more cooperation, more compassion is allowed to come forward in that experience. And then when they finally decide, okay, it's time for us to go back to war and kill each other again, each goes back to their trenches, but when they shoot over each other's heads. And if I remember correctly, I believe it was the Germans or the Allies that got the message that they were going to bomb the location of the opposing army's trenches. And so the leader goes out on the battlefield of whichever one it was, goes out with a white flag and says, they're getting ready to bomb you guys. Why don't you come over and hang out in our trenches? And so over they come, and then as the bombing is completed and they're going back, saying, you know, now that this has happened, you know they're going to bomb you, so, you know, our side's going to bomb you, so why don't you come over and hang out in our trenches? And these people, because of the influx of compassion, won't shoot each other anymore. And when you watch this film, Joyous Noel, I think you can buy it for $5 on Amazon, you watch, and all of a sudden, when the killing stops, in comes the church leaders and the military leaders and, you know, in Germany, the Kaiser, and everybody is just enraged. The Kaiser sends all of these German soldiers who are no good as killing machines anymore. One of the lines, there's a powerful song, I'll never forget the first time that I heard it. Someone had given me this CD, and I was driving down the road, and the name of the song, and it's on our website, you can listen to it, the name of the song is Christmas in the Trenches. I was driving when I heard it, and I had to pull off the road in tears. I couldn't drive. As the line is delivered, on each end of the rifle we're the same, and those who send us off to war never have to go to war. It's just so powerful. I mean, tap into whyagain.org and give a listen to that song. It's sung by a Scottish baritone, and his voice is just awesome, and the way he presents it is, and, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. Actually, there's a video producer, the person who produced our four-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and we attempted to get the rights to turn that into a television show. That would, I think, become something that would change the world if it were done. But unfortunately, that it had been already, the rights had been given to someone else to do a movie, and it was turned into Joyous Noel, but just extremely powerful. But I think on the way to recovering our compassion, being restored to compassion, sadness is going to be part of the process, the same way as the healing process. We talk about the symptoms of healing. The person who's going to be restored to human life has to remove, process through, experience all the energies that have been stored in their physiology that inhibit their human lives. And so if it's rage that takes us out of our humanness, then one is going to process through rage, guilt, grief, fear, pain. And the forgiveness work is about removing those things so that we can be restored to human life. And not only restore ourselves, but, and I love the Native American term, metaquiasin, for all our relations. And each of us is doing this work for all of our relations. And, you know, if you listen to Einstein, who says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. All of your relations include 7.5 billion people on the planet. So thank you for doing the work that you're doing, each one that steps in and does it, each one that supports it, each one that extends the vision is bringing us closer and closer to critical mass and a shift happening on the planet.
Okay.
Yes,
that was beautiful. I'm going to re-listen to this, of course. My mind is saying, so should I or should I not do worksheets on sadness?
Of course.
I know that I should be doing a worksheet on sadness? Always?
Well, if I'm feeling sadness, if my normal state, if my true normal, pardon me, I shouldn't say my normal state because normal's become pretty bizarre. If my true natural state is this awesome, alive, delighted, excited presence of love, then anything that is less than that that comes up is an appropriate topic for forgiveness. So if it's just, you know, there's a great line in The Course in Miracles. It doesn't address sadness in this case, but The Course in Miracles says that the slightest irritation is the cover for the greatest levels of rage. And so even the subtle little things that come up, if you start forgiving as to those things, you start to move through those things, you'll uncover and release energies that, you know, and the sadness you may be working on may not even be your own. It might be, you know, how many generations in our bloodline, if you're working on these Native American issues and war issues, how many generations in our world, and I think of, you know, just being here in America, how many generations of Native Americans have been touched by the insanity of what's been done to the Native Americans, and how many people who were doing that have been touched by the pain or the turmoil, even if they haven't allowed themselves to look at it and feel it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I would offer that just the slightest little twinge of sadness. I look at what's my goal here. I cancel it, and I move through those layers. Jeannie, you may have something to add here, having some Native American heritage and done some work in regard to this whole conversation. You have anything to share, Jeannie?
Sure. I have, during breathing sessions, tapped into, you know, if you asked me if I believed in past lives, I'd say no. However, it really felt like me. But whether it was a generational thing that happened somewhere to a Native American child in my past, or whether it actually was me, that doesn't really matter. It has given me opportunities to work through a lot of sadness and a lot of fear. And what I experienced was that as a Native American child had been captured by these white men and then was used as a sexual trade for furs and different things and was kept in a cage and had to walk behind the horse with a rope behind the neck and, you know, all of these things of abuse. And it resonates with past relationships that I've had and some of the abuse that has gone on with that and given me opportunities to clear it up. And anytime we watch a movie or a television show or anything that has to do with the Native Americans and abuse, I mean, it immediately sends me into process. I mean, we went into a museum that had, it was in St. Louis, and it's absolutely one of the most awesome Native American museums that I've ever seen. It's right at the base of the arch. And just walking through there, by the time I came out, I just had tears running down my face, just looking at and experiencing some of the abuse that had gone on. And to me, it feels very personal. And so whenever that resonates with sadness, then I know that, you know, any feeling that's less than love, whether it's being sad or being afraid or even being angry at what happened, that's opportunities for me to do worksheets on it. I can have compassion for other people that have gone through, like we did a Women Healing Women retreat here in Pompano a few weeks ago, and a common theme was abuse. And so I had compassion for them, but some of them, they could share their stories, and although I had compassion for them because I understood what they were going through, they would share something, and I could just sit in a space of love, and the reaction of fear or pain or turmoil was absent. So to me, that was a difference. And, you know, if I could just sit there and listen to them and hold the space of love and talk with them and share, then that was compassionate. But if something they shared, you know, resonated within me and I felt sad or a twinge of my own fear or whatever, then I knew that that was part of my work that I still needed to do. So that's how I can tell the difference between the two. But most of the time, when I go into tears and fear and upset over something I've seen or experienced with the Native Americans or with anything, but that's a strong point for me, then I know that I've still got work to do around it.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I'm hearing you say that for you, compassion means understanding another person's pain and holding a space of love for them.
Absolutely.
Right.
If you can just, you know, you hold that space of love and you can be understanding and supportive of them without going into your own trauma, then that's compassion. But if it triggers any, you know, even a small amount of trauma within yourself, whether it's sadness or fear or whatever, then that's a sign, okay, I need to do some more work on this.
Okay. That helps
so
a whole lot.
Yeah, so what's going on inside of you is your barometer of whether it's just a compassion to another person or whether it's your work that needs to be done.
Wonderful. I just want you to know that Brad and I listen every day. We don't often speak except to each other and others, but we're here every day with hearts of
love. Well,
Thank you.
We appreciate you both for the work that you're doing individually and together, and the fact that you're holding that space, and it's a powerful, powerful thing to do. You know, when people come together, as Jeannie was talking about, in an intensive and people are processing, I kind of tongue-in-cheek will oftentimes say it gives a whole new meaning to laying them in the aisles, because something triggers for someone that, you know, maybe is totally unexpected by the rest of the group, and all of a sudden the whole group is laying down breathing. It's triggered something for everybody in the group. And or in reverse, I remember one time in particular we had a woman who showed up at Heartland. We were in the middle of an intensive, and this woman comes up in her old beat-up car, and so I don't know who she is. I don't know what's going on, and so I asked her, I'm going to take an intermission here. It's about time for an intermission in the class, and I'm going to go speak to this woman. And she had heard about Heartland, and she actually, it's interesting, she had driven from Colorado. I have no idea how she found us out in the boonies, but she found us, and she was very disheveled. She was probably in her 50s and obviously a little bit mentally imbalanced and in a great deal of pain. So we went up to my house and I sat with her and we started to have a conversation. I asked her if she wanted something to drink and I got some, I mean, she wanted water, so I got some water. And we're sitting there and my phone had rung and it was someone that I'd been trying to reach for several days. So I asked if I could excuse myself when I answered that phone call. And she said, yes, of course. And so I went to the other room to answer the phone call. And when I came back, her car was pulling out of the driveway. And I went back down to the classroom, and I couldn't teach. I was in such grief. So I was the one laying on the floor breathing while everyone in the intensive supported me. And you never know what's going to trigger something that is in need of healing, perhaps from our own lives, perhaps generationally. And the fact that we're all in this together and each one that does their work opens a space a little wider for for each other one who has that particular piece of work to do. And that's why we're so focused in doing what we've been doing for the last 45 years. And, you know, the fact that we travel and basically teach our workshops free and pay our own expenses because we're committed to getting enough people on the team of taking this work to every mind, heart, and being on the planet and integrating the tools into more and more lives. So much appreciation to both of you.
Thank you, Michael and Jeannie and everyone.
Blessings. Appreciate the call. So, Jeannie, do we have any other callers? By the way, while Jeannie's taking a look there and comes on, there's a thing we call the Hydra effect, too. When you start doing a piece of work around a given issue, you know, in the Greek mythology, the Hydra effect, or the Hydra, was the creature who, when you cut off her head, several other heads appeared. And there was a movie recently that I think it was made based on the Hydra. And we've called that the Hydra effect, in that when you start to do a piece of work around an issue, oftentimes under the surface there will be many more pieces of work to be done in regard to that particular issue. So I know for myself, when I do a worksheet, I've always got a stack of at least a dozen blanks. And if I touch into even the slightest hint of something, you know, I might touch into as I'm doing the goal toward, you know, a particular issue going on in my life right now. And I just have this little thing pop up in my mind of, you know, I had a goal, something like that, for some other situation. Then I'll stop the worksheet I'm working on, and I'll go to number 3, and I'll write that goal in, and I'll write in number 1A the name of the object of attention of that second worksheet goal. And so I've got a second worksheet started. And I'll, you know, if I touch into, you know, any emotion that's coming up and my mind says, yeah, and you had that same feeling around what happened with Charlie, then I'll start a third worksheet with Charlie, and I'll just put the emotion in and go back to the primary worksheet. And I've had times where I've had 8 or 10 worksheets come up as I'm doing, you know, that primary worksheet. As the subtle things peek their heads out, you know, we're pretty good at denial as a species. And the impact of denial is that it serves to keep things hidden from us. You know, you remember in the ancient Aramaic physics language where they understood how the whole game worked, and it says, nothing will remain hidden, everything will be made known in the light of day. And what that means is that when I go into denial, and again, our functioning definition of denial is, if I talk about something outside of me as causing something inside of me, I'm in denial. And I create a dissociated state out of that denial. And so when I do that and I then hide something from myself, I get really good at hiding from myself. And, you know, most of the planet is, they're like professionals at hiding. And as I touch into subtle pieces of the puzzle and I let those pieces surface, the result of looking into and following those pieces down into depth, if you want to hear a worksheet that was done where the Hydra effect was really quite pronounced and quite profound, I believe it's the second link. If you're new to the show and you want to tap into this forgiveness process, our website is www.whyagain.org. And if you look in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link that says Start Here. If you click there, you'll see a free download of Chapter 24 of my book. You'll see the actual worksheet process step by step. Here it is, fill in the blanks. And then there are at least 6 radio shows where you can download an MP3 and listen to us guiding somebody through a worksheet. The second link in that series of shows is one actually that was done, many of you have heard Magda's name on the show, Magda's called in several times, was done with Magda. And I think, if I remember correctly, Magda ended up with something like 14 worksheets out of that primary, just kept making notes on what needed to be done. And so If you want to tap into that Hydra effect, you can see how it unfolds, or listen to how it unfolds if you listen to that particular MP3. And, of course, we've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. I don't even know exactly how many. It's got to be coming up to, I don't know, maybe 800, 900, 1,000 hours of shows that you can listen to on the Internet. You can download them. They're all there, MP3s. You just right-click, save it to your computer, and you know, you can put it on your iPhone or your MP3 player or whatever and give a listen and be listening wherever you are. So that's, to me, one of the awesome gifts of having to have this having this radio show and the opportunity to share with people what we're doing. So, Jeannie, what's happening on your end?
We do not... No, I'm chatting with Michelle in the chat room, and then we have some guests in there. Nobody has their hand up, but we're down to less than 9 minutes. So why don't you share about the Costa Rica thing?
Okay. After we had talked on Friday about the Costa Rica project and the possibilities with it, I had several people calling wanting to know more about the property that we were looking at. And, you know, over the years, over 45 years of doing this work, we've never done any kind of a fundraising project. We did, when our van broke down unexpectedly, invite people to support us, and they generously did so that we could get back on the road. With our van having broken down. But other than that, we've never done any kind of a fundraising project, and we are entering into a fundraising project because I think this is going to be an important key to taking this work to the next level. And so Jeannie and I recently visited Costa Rica and opened that second country we got to open this year. We've been working to open a new country every year. And by the way, if you're listening to the show and you speak another language, the book is available free on our website. And, of course, English, German, Russian, Spanish, Farsi. Parts of it are available in Thai, French. And someone's working on Brazilian Portuguese. There's several. There's a French translation that's being worked on. So we're doing everything we possibly can. This project is about taking it to every mind, heart, and being on the planet and making it available. And the work that we ended up doing in Costa Rica led us to looking at an absolutely awesome piece of property. Kind of happened by accident. We'd actually gone originally to look at a five-acre piece that belonged to a friend of ours. He invited us down, and he wanted us to find a way to take it off his hands, and it turned out that it just wasn't an appropriate piece of property for us. But in looking around the country, we found a piece that was in an area where there are paved roads all the way up to within a mile or two of the property, which... Everywhere else we went in Costa Rica, the roads were horrendous. I mean, just unbelievable. But this one has paved space right up, or paved road almost up to it. And so what we're looking at doing is putting together a fundraising project to assist us in making that Heartland South. We had some folks who stepped in and volunteered to take over the operation of Heartland, to take that off of our plate. And so, you know, that loosens us up to take things to the next level. And so we're looking at this as a possibility in many ways. We explained on Friday, if you weren't on the show, that we have a medical doctor out in Las Vegas who this gentleman actually writes prescriptions. You've heard his voice on the show before if you've been around a while, Dr. Andraki and his wife Claudia. And they were telling us about a thing called a novella in the Spanish world. And the novellas are kind of short-term soap operas. You know, they run for several weeks, and then it is something that just gathers everybody's attention throughout the whole Spanish world, both on this side of the pond and the other side of the pond. And this property has everything set up to almost be a total turnkey operation for intensives, for creating these novellas. And basically what we would do, it's just kind of a standard soap opera as it is now in the Spanish world, but what we'd do is then we'd start bringing in the forgiveness principle, so that by the end of the the series, whatever length it is, 10, 12 weeks, what have you, there would be healing happen and demonstrate in that world that the healing can occur. And we're looking into the possibility of a television license in Costa Rica, and then something we can syndicate throughout the world, in the Spanish world. But some folks, as we talked about this project, were asking more about the property, so we've gotten a bit of a description. I'll just share it with you so that you know what we're talking about. It's actually a piece of property that was at one time a pre-Columbian village. It's about 50 acres, and there's a working organic farm and teaching center already on the property. The whole property was designed with permaculture and sustainable principles right from the get-go. There's a produce business. The property was in a process of a divorce of the folks who owned it, and so they both pretty much, as I understand it, abandoned it about 4 years ago, and there's a Costa Rican family there who carried on the farm business, and they basically supply greens to a whole area of the country, and so the property tends to be self-sustaining in that regard. But the folks who own it are ready to get rid of it. The property has been under permaculture cultivation for about 9 years. There's a two-story open concept main house, and the second story of the house is about 1,600 square feet, which is a perfect size for a classroom and a studio where we would do video work. There's high-speed internet available there, which we don't have at Heartland, where we would do video work and with workshops, and the vision is to create the novellas there. So this is a beautiful two-story, 1,600 square foot on one floor, with, you know, two-car garage and storage area, laundry area, all of that. There's a guest cabin, a one-bedroom guest cabin with a shower and a composting toilet. There's a volunteer house with a kitchen, baths, composting toilet. It will sleep about 16 people, and it would be easy to adapt to double that because it's on the second story, so the first story could be done, made into rooms as well pretty quickly. There's a workshop storage area, a large covered outdoor work area. There are two separate two-bedroom house in that workshop area with a bath, kitchen. There's a separate office already set up. There's a student center. There's a camping area for 8 to 10 people that's already, you know, completed. There's a small field pit toilet with a baby change area for outdoor events, camping and such. There's a goat house with two separate stable rooms, three rotational pastures that are completely fenced. There's a chicken house with room for about 50 chickens, all fenced. The greenhouse is about 5,000 square feet with a produce preparation area, seed saving area, and a tree nursery. There's approximately 10 acres under organic cultivation with 1,000 fruit trees, 200 different varieties, medicinal plants, tropical medicinals, about 1,000 semi-hardwood trees and construction-grade bamboo. There are 3 year-round rivers on the property, 20-plus springs. There's a small pond, a fully contained river swimming pool, and they say countless hidden waterfalls that you walk through the 50-acre property. So it's about two-thirds primary forest. It borders a natural preserve, and there's also an outdoor space for doing gatherings. So it's really quite an amazing piece of property and would be just the ideal Heartland South, and we're just about out of time. So I'll just say, if you have any inclination to support that project, we just came back and we're getting ready to set up a place for folks to donate. If they choose to do that, we're going to create a fundraiser, and we're looking to raise $450,000 to empower this whole project going to the next level. So if you're interested in supporting that, we'd love to have your support. In the meantime, the best gift you can give the planet is create the best year yet of your eternal life, and that's what we're here to support you into it. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.